Hello and welcome to Banfield. Julius Jones is alive tonight. And that is news that he, his family, and their legions of supporters have certainly been praying for. He had been scheduled to die 5 hours ago by lethal injection at the Oklahoma State Penitentiary in McAllister. In fact, he was already moved to a cell just adjacent to the execution chamber. But just 4 hours before he was scheduled to get that deadly needle, Oklahoma's governor stepped in with a clemency order that converts Jones' sentence from death to life. But there's a catch. No possibility of parole or pardon or further commutation by a future governor. Julius was just 19 years old. He was convicted of killing a man named Paul Howell. That was back in 99. His trial defense was slipshod. His own lawyer admitted it was lousy. And later, his co-defendant confessed to other inmates, plural, that he, not Jones, was the real killer. Through it all, Jones' family prayed for a miracle. And tonight, they say they are thanking God continuously. Julius Jones' mother, Madeline, and sister, Antoinette, both going to join me live in just a few minutes. But first, I want to bring in News Nation's Marky Martin, who's been covering an emotional day at Oklahoma's Capitol. Marky, was this decision by the governor completely unexpected? And at the same time, talk to me about how it was received.
Hey, good evening, Ashley. Today at the Oklahoma Capitol was just explosive, and we talked to so many people. And when you ask about, you know, was this expected, most of the people that we talked to today said they did not expect Governor Stitt to make this decision. They said they hoped and they prayed that he would, but they did not expect this to come to fruition. But when that news came down at 12:08 this afternoon, that's when Stitt's office sent out that email. I mean, this building just erupted. There were cries, there were shouts, people overcome with emotion. They could not believe today what they were reading with their own eyes, Ashley.
So, Marky, what is also really astounding is that five Republicans joined these legions of people in asking the governor to adopt what the Board of Pardon and Parole had said, and that was that he should actually have his sentence commuted not just from death, but down to life with the possibility of parole. That has to be a very unusual sentiment where you're standing.
Yeah, especially in a state, you know, as red as Oklahoma, you have five GOP lawmakers came forward in support of commuting Julius's sentence. And today in the Capitol, I mean, there was bipartisan support in there. Talked to lawmakers, you know, on both sides. And they said, you know, there is just enough doubt in this case not to move forward with today's execution. But a lot of hands on deck here, a lot of support on both sides of the aisle. Ashley, you're exactly right.
And so talk to me about the support outside. I mean, it's one thing to be in the Capitol. It's another thing to be the public. Still 50% of this country supports capital punishment. So there had to be a lot of people who were very disappointed and upset for the Howell family today.
Yeah, you know, at the same time, you acknowledge that this is a victory day for Julius Jones' family, but you have to acknowledge what the Howells have gone through as well. You know, this was not the decision they wanted to see. In fact, Paul's sister was the lone adult eyewitness to that murder back in 1999. She testified that it was Jones who pulled the trigger. So the Howell family, not pleased, but they did come forward and say that, you know, they found relief that Governor Stitt said in the future, Julius would not be eligible for commutations or pardons or paroles. But yeah, you know, there is a mixed bag here of reaction. But I will say, you know, we were here at the Capitol all day long. There wasn't anybody that we talked to that was in favor of putting Julius Jones to death today.
It's just been an incredibly fascinating case. Marky Markle, thank you for that. I want to bring in now Kelly Masters. She's an attorney who has been part of the legal fight to spare Julius Jones' life. Kelly, thank you for joining me again tonight. The big question a lot of people have when they heard, okay, you can have your life, but you have to spend it locked away for the rest of that natural life, no parole, is, wait, really? isn't there any shot? And there is a shot, right?
Not under this executive order currently, but yes, the fight is certainly not over. I'm so pleased, and I was so pleased to get that phone call from the governor's office today, letting us know that, in fact, Julius's life was going to be spared. However, the specific executive order signed by Governor Stitt basically disallows him seeking any sort of additional relief, parole, commutation, pardon, under that executive order. So it looks like a very dead end for him under this order. However, we all know that executive orders can be reversed, can be rescinded. Either by Governor Stitt himself, if he has a change of heart, or by a successor. And so at this hour, we are just thankful that Julius gets to live and see another day. It was clear to me that the governor did, in fact, see enough doubt in this case not to execute Julius after a thorough review. And so even though he has closed the door, at least for the time, on any additional relief, we're not giving up. At some point, if there is an opportunity to seek relief, we will.
Okay, so I'm going to read something from Governor Kevin Stitt, basically saying, you know, his hands were tied by the Constitution, which I found very intriguing. He said, neither the Oklahoma Constitution nor Oklahoma law otherwise provided the Pardon and Parole Board with the authority to recommend that the sentence of death be commuted to life with the possibility of parole. But I don't understand that, because maybe it's an Oklahoma thing, but generally speaking, you can absolutely do that. Do you understand the law differently than that?
You know, I'm not as familiar with the Pardon and Parole Board restrictions. I know that they read that differently or interpreted that, the recommendation that they could make differently. The way I read the Oklahoma Constitution is that future paroles may be limited under these circumstances, but the governor is not limited from commuting a sentence to time served, or to some other sentence, or possibly even pardoning him if he believed that Julius was innocent. So there are certain restrictions placed by the Constitution, but there are also loopholes as well.
So this is also very disturbing for lay people to hear. And I don't care if you're for the death penalty or you're not for the death penalty. When you hear this, this is troublesome. And the Pardon and Parole Board made the recommendation to stop the execution and at least give the guy an opportunity to get out one day based on, and I'm just going to read this off, strong evidence of, number one, his innocence. That should be big enough. Number two, sentencing disparity. Number three, prosecutorial misconduct. Number four, racial bias. And then a big number five, which is other serious problems. I don't know how many more serious problems you can have than that. So I think it just sort of defies logic. It can't sit well with anybody who even supports capital punishment that a man with this many problems and this much that points towards his innocence is, well, we'll just, you know, give him a real reprieve and lock him up forever.
You know, that was what was remarkable about this case. When I was first approached to even look at the case, and I was just approached not as a lawyer necessarily for Julius, but just as someone who could review the case and make a recommendation to the governor, I have to say I was in favor of the death penalty. I think I may have shifted after seeing the strong evidence of innocence in this particular case. But what we saw was even proponents of the death penalty, strong proponents of the death penalty, tend to agree that if there is doubt in a case, that the death penalty is final. And we really do need to ensure that there is no chance that we are executing someone who is innocent. And so I think in this case, the fact that the governor was willing to at least in part follow the recommendation of the Pardon and Parole Board and save Julius from execution, it's still very troubling that in a case where there is ample evidence of innocence, in addition to all of the other things that you listed, that for at least for now, Julius is still in prison for life for something that many of us believe he did not do.
That's a hard thing to swallow. I'm not going to lie. Kelly, I really appreciate you taking the time, not just earlier this week, but tonight as well on this, I'm sure, very auspicious night for you and the group that you've worked with. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Kelly Masters joining me. Okay, so a total of 5 Republicans joined this effort to pressure the Republican governor to grant that clemency to Julius Jones. Republicans. Oklahoma Congressman Kevin McDougall is one of them. He, tonight, is going to join Democratic State Senator George Young and talk to me a little bit about this very unusual dynamic. Thank you to both of you for joining me. If it's okay, Congressman McDougall, I'd like to start with you. I did not expect that we were going to have this conversation. I don't usually expect that Republicans will go against a Republican governor to say, this isn't right, switch your mind, give clemency. Talk to me about this process you went through.
Yeah, my process is pretty simple because I've been working on another case of a death row inmate that I believe is 100% innocent. And the Julius Jones team reached out to me, and Kelly Masters, I trust with everything, and she's done an outstanding job researching this case. And when she said she had doubts, I simply came out and said, listen, if we've got doubts in any case on death row, then we have to stop death. We have to give an opportunity for innocence to be proved. And so that's why I spoke up in the Julius Jones case. I didn't have time to research, honestly, Julius Jones the way that I have the other case for the last 2 years. So I called Kelly Masters and said, is there doubt? And she said, I'm 99% sure that he's innocent. And I said, that's enough for me. So I've got to speak up for life. No matter who it is. And Julius Jones has enough people that believe there's doubt in this case. And so I had to take a stand. I couldn't stand by. And I believe the governor did the right thing today. And now we have an opportunity, if there's overwhelming evidence, which some say there's not overwhelming evidence, some say there is. But if we ever find that videotape that says somebody else committed the murder, then Julius Jones can live another day. If we would have executed him today, then...
You don't get a mulligan. You just, you know, I have said this so much in my career, you do not get a mulligan. And I don't know who among us thinks people are perfect, because I sure don't. Senator, that brings me to you. This is a jubilant time, obviously, for those who supported this cause. It's very difficult for the Howells, and I can understand that as well. But there is still the same thing that Representative McDougall just said, and that is that there is still an injustice here if there's a man locked up if he did not do that crime. Does your work continue, sir, and do you still have as many supporters in pushing for, say, a new trial and perhaps an exoneration?
Thank you so much for having me on. Let me first say that I was relieved in receiving the news that what the governor had done, but I'm not letting the governor off the hook. This has been going on for 21 years. We've had this situation before us, and I'm still dismayed with how long it took the governor. Let me quickly say that I'm with the Howell family. I grieve with them and their loss, and that's significant and important. And I believe that they believe what they have been told. The fact is, you have listed off already earlier in the program several pieces of information that would have led anyone to believe that reasonable doubt was there. And so from the very beginning, this case has been a case that has been judged by, listen, racial insensitivity. We African Americans make up 7-8% of the population in the state of Oklahoma. We're over 25-30% of the incarcerated personnel under the Department of Corrections. That's the problem right there, is that this has gone on so long, and now we've had this influx of people who have come and gotten behind it. I'm glad. But the governor waited till the last moment. To me, that was, he put the Howell family, he put the Jones family through this turmoil when he should not have done it. The information was enough that this case was not clear enough, that he should have ruled earlier and signed it. That's what you have a pardon and parole board for, to help you understand the cases that you don't have the time to investigate. And two times they came back and said, we would like to have life with the possibility of parole. And he still can't make the decision. It takes him up to this time and probably some pressure from the cases, the lawsuits that are being filed about the inhumane way that we are killing folk in Oklahoma. It needs to stop. And so I'm relieved for the family. I talked to Mother Jones tonight. I'm relieved for the family. But no, this does not stop. It is not about Julius Jones. It is above and beyond and larger than Julius Jones. This is something that we've got to stop right now. It's been going on far too long.
But at the same time, there is, I mean, if you say baby steps, that's what happened tonight. And they are very large baby steps. So there is that part. I want to thank both of you, first of all, for coming together at a time when I just don't even know that this happens anymore. Having a Republican and a Democrat on the same screen, it's just really delightful. And then to be, to be working together on an issue that is so dire. Congratulations to both of you for doing this and for what you may end up doing in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, there is really no job like this. No job on earth. The spiritual advisor to a condemned man. In a moment, meet the man who tried to help make sense of a personal apocalypse to a dead man walking. And then just imagine how, day after day, he counseled that man's mother and that man's sister, knowing that Julius's time on earth was down to mere hours. Coming up, Reverend Keith Jossel, spiritual advisor, along with Julius Jones's sister. They're going to talk to us about what this has been like. Antoinette Jones and Keith Jossel coming up next.
What are you feeling right now?
Peaceful. Just been thanking God continuously without ceasing. This is all due to God. God said he shall live and not die.
That is a condemned man's sister learning he is no longer a condemned man. Welcome back. Our story is the triumph of life over death, and I could not mean that more literally tonight. Oklahoma death row inmate Julius Jones is still an inmate tonight and likely will be for life, but execution is no longer his destiny. My next guests have walked a long and lonely road with Julius Jones for many, many years now. Antoinette Jones, who you just saw, is Julius Jones's sister, and the Reverend Keith Jossel took on the role of Julius's spiritual advisor when all had seemed lost. Welcome to the both of you. Antoinette, I cannot imagine what you are feeling. I spoke to you two nights ago, and your nerves were on edge. Your angst was palpable, and I could see the torture, the emotional torture you were going through. Talk to me about how you're doing tonight.
I'm feeling lighter. I know my parents are elated, and my mom was definitely doing the holy dance. She has been doing the holy dance today. But we are blessed that the governor stepped in when he did.
Well, I know your mom was supposed to be with us tonight, and I can completely understand if she has other things happening. So I appreciate you, Antoinette, talking to us on this really remarkable turn of events. Reverend, I want to ask you the same question. This is particularly emotional for you as well, because I don't know how you were doing your job preparing Julius. I don't know that any of us could imagine it, but tell me how you're feeling.
I am. I'm inspired by Julius Jones. Julius, even today, Julius was believing that God was going to deliver him, even in the midst of every possible indicator leading to the fact that he was going to be executed. Today, he was told about students in Oklahoma that were walking out of their schools all over the state in support of him. And his focus was on, look at what our young generation is learning, how to stand up for truth and justice. He wasn't even focused on his own life today. That's the that's the individual that is Antoinette's brother and Mother Madeline's son. And so we can't be more elated that Julius lives today and we get the chance to continue to fight tomorrow.
Antoinette, have you had a chance to speak with your brother yet? I think you're either muted or your Wi-Fi is low. I can't hear you. Antoinette, can you hear us?
Yes, okay, I got to speak to talk more about.
Can you say that again?
I got to talk to him for about 3 minutes. He told me real quick, I love you. He said, but listen to me. And he said, I don't know when I get the phone again. I don't know the phone privileges, but I want y'all to know I love you. And the fight is not over. We didn't get the commute sentence that we were that we felt the governor should have adopted. Excuse me, but we are still hopeful, and we're speaking that he shall get his freedom one day.
Can you tell me what your mom said and what Julia said to your mom?
So when I gave her the news, she was like, hallelujah, thank you, Jesus. And then she started jumping up and down, and I could hear her jumping up and down over the phone call. And my dad was like, I already knew. And so, yeah, today was the day. Thank God.
Reverend, this is a hard question, because while there is jubilation for Antoinette and her mom, Madeline, and obviously for Julius, he was 4 hours from execution. There is another family, and they believe that Julius killed their loved one, and they are grieving, and they're now going through a sort of torture for themselves. As a reverend, how would you counsel them tonight?
Well, I have said from the beginning, and this family has said from the beginning, that we seek God's justice. And God's justice brings truth, and truth sets us all free. We have, from the first moment that we have advocated for Julius's release, we have advocated for justice for Oklahoma, justice for the Howell family, and justice for the Jones family. And we've never thought that those three contradicted each other. They were actually really in alignment with each other. The citizens of Oklahoma should not have innocent blood on their hands for executing an innocent man. The Howell family deserves to know the truth. The murderer of their loved one is on the streets of Oklahoma today, and that is not justice for them, and they deserve justice. And the Jones family deserves justice. Julius deserves justice. He deserves to be free. The Pardon and Parole Board, which is the only legal proceeding in the state of Oklahoma over the last 22 years that has actually looked at the totality of the evidence, has voted twice. And this is a Republican-appointed Pardon and Parole Board, has voted twice that Julius Jones deserves life with the possibility of parole. And we will not continue. We will not stop fighting until Julius is able to come home and be with his family.
Well, I hope that you'll continue to talk to us, because I want to follow your story and see what happens next and find out if there's progress. And I'm happy for both of you and for your family and your loved ones and your friends that you have received this justice tonight. Thank you, Antoinette. Thank you, Reverend Keith Jossell. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Day three. We are day three, and no verdict for Kyle Rittenhouse. And now the feisty judge has banned MSNBC from the courtroom, while the sheriff has brought breakfast to all the protesters. News Nation's Brian Enten is watching everything, and he is live with us tonight in Wisconsin. That's next. Tale of two trials today in the North and the South, both with murder charges, life in prison, and white defendants. And with each day, politics and race getting louder in each case. I'm going to take you down South first. Three men on trial for the killing of Ahmaud Arbery. The defense rested today, But, and it's a big but, not before the man who pulled the trigger, Travis McMichael, was eviscerated by the prosecutor. Linda Donosky kind of exploded onto the national scene because she is all business. And she is the reason why it is a gamble to take the stand. It's a little like going up against Goliath when you ain't David. And today she weaved her magic because Travis McMichael was struggling to explain a key piece of his defense, why he chased Ahmaud in the first place.
So at this point in time, he's running away from you. He has not threatened you.
No.
Hasn't pulled out a gun.
No, ma'am.
Hasn't pulled out a knife.
He did not.
Still arms at his sides.
That's correct.
And he's trying to get away from you.
And I was letting him run away.
What were you nervous about while giving this statement?
I just killed a man. I had blood on me still. Mm-hmm. I was the most traumatic event of my life. I was scared to death. I mean, it was the most traumatic event of my life. I don't know anybody who wouldn't be scared or stressed or terrified or anything. I mean, it was horrible.
I'm talking about giving your statement 2 hours later at a police station. You were nervous because you thought you were going to jail, right?
No. I gave him a statement. I mean, if
you
I would have...
Somebody, you don't think you're going to jail.
That's yikes. And then there was the outside the courtroom part in Georgia. Lots and lots of action, and perhaps not unexpected. A large group of demonstrators gathered in the morning. But then there was a scene that you really, honestly, you don't usually see. More than 100 black pastors joined Arbery's family and formed what they called a wall of prayer. You might have heard that a few days ago, Kevin Goff, a defense attorney, asked the judge to ban what he described as black pastors from being political in the courtroom. Georgia pastor Jamal H. Bryant was leading this group.
It reminds me of the trial that your son went through with Pilate and the governor. And we know that God and Pilate said, what should I do with this innocent man? Let those three people who allowed the life of Mr. Aubrey be taken for nothing. Let them be found guilty, God. Let them suffer the consequences of being the judge, juror, and executioner without no probable cause or just cause.
Alveda King had something to say as well. She is the niece of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And on all three cases making the news today, Ahmaud Arbery, Julius Jones, and Kyle Rittenhouse, she reiterated her famous uncle's words. Hate begets hate. Violence begets violence. Toughness begets a greater toughness. We must meet the forces of hate with the power of love. So there was the scene down south, and I'm going to take you up north now to temperatures below freezing. That's where Brian Enten is standing by live for us outside the courthouse in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Okay, Brian, I was not expecting a sheriff to show up and bring everybody in the press coffee and donuts today, but that's what's happened, and that seems like a very different environment than what we all expected.
Yeah, it was interesting. The Kenosha County Sheriff showed up. He had his deputies with him. They showed up with all of these cookies and hot coffee from Dunkin' Donuts. They had a table. They set it all up right in front of the courthouse. And some of the deputies were having coffee, and a lot of the protesters were having coffee. And basically, the sheriff said, look, he just sort of wanted to have a moment where he connected with them. He wanted things to stay peaceful. Listen to what the sheriff told me.
Just to kind of break the ice. I did this about 5 years ago with another protest that we had, and I brought out carrot cakes to everybody, and it seemed to just kind of defuse part of it. So our ultimate goal is to do the kind of the same thing. Show everybody we're here, we're supporting, we're here to protect, we're all part of the same team here today.
So it was really kind of a nice moment, Ashley, and it actually seemed to work. Things were calm today for the most part. 30, 40 protesters in front of the courthouse, no real issues. There was one guy who got arrested. He had a gun here. While Wisconsin is an open carry state, the issue here by the courthouse is it's within 1,000 feet of a school, so you're not allowed to have a gun. They quickly got him in a van and took him away, but for the most part, things have been calm.
Well, let's hope that stays, and maybe they can maybe bring out a catered dinner, because sometimes it gets ugly at nighttime. Okay, so quickly, day three now, no verdict. Tomorrow's Friday, and all of my experience says lots of people, when they're sitting on a jury and they've been there all week, they want a Friday verdict so that they don't have to come back, you know, and be there all weekend, or, God forbid, Monday as well. So there's that chance. But today was weird because one of the jurors asked the judge if she could take home the jury instructions, and I have never in my days of covering court heard of anybody who's ever allowed to take anything home. In fact, it's the opposite. Don't look at anything when you're home. Don't talk amongst yourselves. Don't do any of this business. But that happened.
Yeah, this was, I mean, there's been a lot of strange moments with this trial, and especially with the judge, and this was just yet another one. End of the day, it's before 5 o'clock, so the jurors decided they wanted to wrap up early, which was interesting in itself. And then one of the jurors, this woman, basically raises her hand and says, "Is it okay if I take the juror instructions home with me?" And the judge actually said yes. And I thought that was odd. I immediately texted every lawyer I know saying, "Have you ever heard of this?" And no one says that they've ever heard of anything like this happening. I mean, you'd know better than me, Ashley, but you know, I'm sort of under the assumption that when the jurors go home, they're not really supposed to talk about the case or to be going over instructions or evidence or anything like that. So that really came as a surprise.
Yeah, I think it's really super weird. But okay, look, it's 36 pages and they were really confusing. So I guess maybe the judge is trying to help them out, but you know, it's on the record. Okay, so then I've only got 30 seconds left, but MSNBC got banned. They're not allowed in the courthouse. What's the deal there? Is that really going to be permanent?
Yep, no MSNBC allowed in the courthouse. Basically, the judge says that there was a freelance MSNBC producer that was following the jury van. While the jurors aren't sequestered, they get in this van at the end of the day. They go to an undisclosed location where they get into their cars to go home. And the judge says there was this producer following them, actually ran a red light, which is why they got pulled over and were discovered by the police. Judge decided now he's going to ban MSNBC from the entire courthouse.
Well, NBC says they're working completely in cooperation with the folks there. They said that that guy never photographed or intended to photograph them and that they regret this incident. So we'll see if that lasts. But I don't like hearing media getting banned from a public space where there's a public process. Otherwise, you're on a slippery slope to hooded justice into the gulag. Okay, Brian, thank you. I know it's freezing cold and it's late at night, so go get yourself a hot chocolate or one of those Dunkin' Donuts things. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian joining us again tonight.